This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, March 29th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear from a climate scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research about his observations and thoughts on the fire that continues to burn next to his workplace. Children's advocates urge Colorado lawmakers to extend school meals for all. We'll have a report on that coming up. And we'll go to our listener comment line to hear what's on the minds of KGNU listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth. On this week's science show, host Susan Moran will be in the studio to chat with biologist and author David George Haskell about his new book, Sounds Wild and Broken: Sonic Marvels, Evolution's Creativity, and the Crisis of Sensory Extinction. Then at 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Neil Smart will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for these headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The Boulder Office of Emergency Management released an update on the NCAR fire late yesterday afternoon and said crews have contained the fire to 68% with its size holding at 190 acres. The next public briefing will be today at 10 a.m. Investigators have not determined the cause of the fire and are asking anyone who was within the trail area south of NCAR Saturday afternoon to contact the Boulder County Sheriff's Office. The City of Boulder issued a statement over the weekend to explain why alerts reached individuals well outside the evacuation zone. The recently implemented wireless emergency alert system uses technology similar to that of Amber Alerts. The alerts reached a broader population, but are less precise when it comes to geographic location. The city statement notes the pre-existing Everbridge alert system, which requires users to opt in, will always be the most focused and most accurate system for receiving important safety notifications. Users can sign up for those alerts at the BoulderOEM.com website. Another fire sparked late yesterday afternoon in Larimer County, east of Estes Park, prompting mandatory and voluntary evacuations. According to the Forest Service, the 23-acre fire, dubbed as the Soulshine Fire, was 30% contained as of Monday night. Adams County Fire Rescue responded to an apartment fire around 4 a.m. this morning in the northeast vicinity of Interstate 25 and U.S. Highway 36. The fire department confirmed one fatality. According to 9 News, crews were able to evacuate residents upon arrival and extinguish the fire. The name of the apartment complex is Waterview on Parkway. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment provided an update yesterday on the recent uptick in COVID-19 cases. KGNU's Rashik Jahan has more.
Colorado health officials said Monday that they are closely monitoring a recent increase in the percentage of positive COVID-19 tests. State epidemiologist Dr. Rachel Herlihy said that, as of Monday, the rate of positive tests has increased to around 3.3% from the prior rate of around 2.5% reported on March 17th. The positivity rate in Colorado remains under the 5% threshold, but health officials note the shift to at-home tests means not all test results are reported in the official data. In yesterday's media briefing, state health officials explained that a rise in cases could be due to the higher transmissibility of the BA.2 Omicron subvariant. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment is tracking the presence of variants in wastewater. Reports show that the BA.2 subvariant is present in around half of Colorado's wastewater systems. For KGNU, I'm Rashik Jahan.
Nurses at Longmont United Hospital secured union membership on Friday, making them the first private hospital in Colorado to unionize. The victory comes after nearly a year-long battle, which included Longmont Hospital's parent company, Centura Health, challenging the validity of mail-in ballots from an election that took place last summer. Registered nurses at the hospital will become members of the National Nurses Organizing Committee, an affiliate of National Nurses United. Union organizers have accused the hospital of delaying the election outcome as an attempt to avoid negotiations for better pay and working conditions. The nurses involved with the union campaign say the hospital does not employ enough staff and has increased staff workload in recent years, potentially putting patients at risk. The hospital RNs will elect a team of peers to represent them in contract bargaining. Colorado charter schools are backing a bill that would allow them to have more responsibility for educating students with disabilities. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The bill would let charter schools assume full legal responsibility for educating students with disabilities, as well as take control over state and federal funding that currently flows to school districts. Colorado Chalkbeat reports that charter schools serve far fewer students with disabilities than district-run schools do. Dan Schaller, president of the Colorado League of Charter Schools, said that charter schools do not have access to the same legal structures that would allow them to serve greater percentages of students with disabilities. House Bill 1294, which received unanimous bipartisan support last Thursday in the House Education Committee, would have charter schools take on the substantial legal responsibilities involved. Also, charter schools will have to be aware of the state needing to have strong oversight and that they would have higher costs and more obligations. Charter schools currently get funds from their school district, but those funds cover only about 35% of the additional cost of educating those students. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The Colorado Supreme Court released a decision yesterday that strikes down a portion of a state statute that addresses cyberbullying. The justices say the law as written limits free speech and violates both the state and U.S. constitutions as it is overly broad. Justice William Hood wrote in the court's opinion the law could criminalize constitutionally protected speech, such as negative restaurant reviews, irate emails, social media posts about public health protocols, diatribes about public figures, or antagonistic comments left on news sites. The legislature tweaked this state's harassment laws in 2015 by strengthening protections for cyberbullying victims. The Denver Post reports the court's decision strikes down only the phrase, quote, intended to harass, end quote, and left in place the rest of the statute, which prohibits communication that threatens bodily harm or property damage or is obscene. Stan Garnett, former Boulder County District Attorney, told the Denver Post the court's change will unlikely have a major retroactive impact through legal appeals, as harassment is rarely the only charge filed in a case. Today's weather includes showers with thunderstorms possible in the afternoon. Today's highs will be in the low 50s. Tonight, rain will continue with a chance of snow in the late overnight hours. Tonight's low will be around 29 degrees. Tomorrow, skies will be partly cloudy with a high near 49 and 51 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Firefighters continue to make progress on extinguishing a blaze near the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Southwest Boulder. In their most recent update, emergency responders said the in-car fire was 68% contained and had burned around 190 acres. The fire itself has, of course, drawn the attention of the climate scientists who work with the facility and live in the surrounding area. Among them is Daniel Swain from NCAR's Center for Climate and Weather Extremes. He says that in the grand scheme of things, the NCAR fire was a small fire, but that its geographic context and proximity to a populated area recently affected by another recent fire gives it added significance.
The first big lesson is that you don't have to necessarily live on a remote road in the mountains to be threatened by wildfire. That's a lesson, of course, that was maybe even more profoundly illustrated in the Marshall Fire, which burned places well out on the plains and well into the suburbs. This NCAR fire is maybe a little bit closer to what the traditional risk zones people might have expected in the past. You know, there are on Table Mesa Drive, for example, wildfire evacuation route signage. So clearly this is something the city has thought about in that particular neighborhood. But the other part of it is that, you know, this is the second significant fire in the community this winter. And that's not the season that I think most folks would typically associate with wildfires in this part of the world. So I think one lesson there is that increasingly we're seeing year-round fire seasons. And, you know, while the peak of the Western fire season is, of course, still during the warm season in summer into early autumn, we really are seeing some highly consequential, significant, fast-moving and home-threatening fires, even in the middle of winter these days. And the third lesson, I guess, is that even though we've had a relatively wet winter, so since January 1st, you know, Boulder's gotten quite a bit of snow relative to how much it normally would have gotten over that period. But some of the landscape and the vegetation, especially the bigger trees and the dead and down vegetation, so whatever branches and logs, you know, some of which might have been blown down in the December windstorm, those are responding to the long-term drought conditions. So, you know, although it's been cool and snowy recently, most folks probably remember that last summer and fall were the warmest and driest such period in over a century of record keeping along the Front Range by a pretty wide margin. And so the landscape in the longer term is still feeling the effects of that long-term drought, even though it has locally abated somewhat. And, you know, the NCAR fire occurs at this interface, sort of at the transition zone between the thicker forests as you go up towards the Continental Divide and the grasslands to the east. So right in that transition zone where this particular fire burned some grass and then some pretty thick stands of conifers as well. So it sort of had the characteristics of both a grass fire and a forest fire at different points. But this is an event, I think, that we're fortunate did not cause, you know, any structure loss. There were no injuries that I'm aware of, but that's really only by a matter of good luck in the sense that there was no strong downslope windstorm. So if we had, for example, winds as occurred during the Marshall fire back in December with an ignition in the same place, I don't think the outcome would have been as favorable for South Boulder. I think there probably would have been a lot of structure loss, and it could have been a catastrophic event, much like the Marshall Fire was. So, you know, the lesson is not necessarily that the risk is lower here than it might have been, you know, in Marshall Canyon. It's just that the weather conditions were more favorable for this fire to be corralled before it was able to move through neighborhoods.
The way you describe it is that this was a fairly close call, but due to favorable weather conditions, like the winds dying down in time, we didn't have the same situation. What can the city of Boulder do to manage open space and have other fire mitigation efforts so that the next blaze isn't so much of a game of luck?
Yeah, I mean, this is a perennial question now throughout the West. You know, Boulder is not unique in that respect. Pretty much all Front Range communities share this potential vulnerability, as do most communities really in the interior West as well. You know, fire ecologists and fire scientists will often talk about the need to decouple wildfire from wildfire catastrophes. So even though an increase in wildfire is inevitable in a warming West, an increase in these fire catastrophes that burn lots of homes and threaten people's lives and livelihoods is not inevitable. And there are a lot of things that we can do to decouple those two things. You know, chief among them is thinking about how we can manage the landscape using beneficial fire. So in many cases, this may involve doing prescribed burns, for example. And, you know, the silver lining to what happened on Saturday with the NCAR fire is that now, in the wake of it, the risk for those neighborhoods on a windy day is probably going to be reduced for a while, because now a lot of those dense fuels on the forest floor have been consumed by what burned over the weekend. So it's an example of kind of almost an unintentional prescribed fire. You know, Boulder is very much, you know, a town at risk of further wildfires, and not just in the foothills above town, but especially on the west side of town, where, you know, we get Boulder and the Front Range does tend to get strong downslope winds. They usually happen during winter, which is what we didn't used to think about as the peak fire season. But I think what this year has made clear is that at least in some winters, there is going to be appreciable fire risk. And it's those really windy days, especially those downslope days where the winds are blowing from the mountains to the plains, are the days when I think this part of the country will be most at risk in these events. And so how do we better learn to make public warnings about these events? So it is interesting that technically neither Saturday nor the day of the Marshall Fire were red flag warning days. They didn't quite meet the technical criteria, even though obviously the risk was quite high in both instances. So I know there are internal conversations at places like the National Weather Service, for example, about how to better characterize these sorts of risks, you know, in terms of public communication and reducing the risk of potential ignitions, you know, because people would hopefully be extra careful on such days. So there's a long list of things, but I think, you know, part of it is recognizing that in fire-prone parts of the West, this is not a problem that's going to go away. And so what we really need to be doing is figuring out how to minimize the risks to populated areas when these fires inevitably do occur.
Daniel Swain is a climate scientist at NCAR's Center for Climate and Weather Extremes. He also tweets under the handle weather_west. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. We'll be back after this short break. Colorado lawmakers are considering a measure that would extend a school Meals for All program that gives all students access to nutritious food, regardless of their family's ability to pay. Federal funding for the program, approved during the pandemic, is set to expire in June. SB 87 has cleared the Senate Education Committee and is under review by the Appropriations Committee. Eric Galatis has more.
Federal COVID relief funds that helped expand access to school meals for all kids, regardless of their ability to pay, are set to expire in June, and children's advocates are urging Colorado lawmakers to make that investment permanent. Ashley Whelan with Hunger Free Colorado says in addition to reducing child hunger and food insecurity, a new bill making its way through the legislature will give food producers across the state access to a reliable customer base and fair prices for their goods.
It has some funding for school districts to purchase healthy local food from our Colorado ranchers and our Colorado farmers and make sure that we're investing back into our state as we're investing in food for children.
Some critics of Senate Bill 87 argue that free meals could create government dependency, with others concerned about costs. Whelan notes the projected cost would be less than 1/3 of 1% of the state's budget. She adds, when kids can access healthy, nutritious food, they do better in school and are less likely to need assistance as adults because they're better equipped to get jobs that pay a living wage. Many Colorado school districts that made meals available to all students last year saw upwards of 20% more kids getting meals. Proponents say removing application requirements and cash registers from cafeterias gives educators more time to focus on learning. Whelan says the program can also put an end to lunch line shaming that low-income kids experience.
They feel shamed and stigmatized when they have to get in the lunch line and show a card. We've had families who testified at the committee that their child came home with a number written on their arm of what the family owed the school for school meals.
She says the program should help families struggling with Colorado's rising cost of living by ending school lunch debt. The measure also aims to address workforce shortages by increasing pay for staff that prepare and serve meals and offers resources to move away from prepackaged and processed foods. SB 87 cleared the Senate's Education Committee with bipartisan support and is now under review by Appropriations. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
We go now to our weekly comment line, which we are airing in full. Well, it was a very full comment line. We had to trim them down so everybody could have a chance to speak. We will air This Week in Water tomorrow.
Hello. I was invited to a high school class, and we were talking about how the Constitution was usurped during the Nixon administration. These kids knew nothing about that. And we're talking about Lewis Powell. And I brought the radio in so that we could hear counterspin. And then all of a sudden, when it was getting really good talking about how civil rights, well, anyway, you guys started broadcasting about the fire that happened Friday and Saturday in Boulder. And I thought, God, you could have been broadcasting that later, because they're just given the same information that we already know about what the fire is going on. And this was pertinent information on Counterspin today for students who are not taught civics anymore or American history in Denver schools. So thank you. I'm just disappointed that it's been interrupted.
Hello, KGNU. I just finished listening to The Blue Frontier on March 22nd, and it was a wonderful program. It's the second one I've heard on KGNU, and I wanted you to know that it's great production. It's really informative and thorough, and I'm so glad KGNU is carrying that. Thanks again.
Yeah, I want my name given, Lynn Siegel. I've never heard such one-sided propaganda on KGNU as on Russia-Ukraine on the 25th of March. Thank you so much. Bye.
Hi, this is Theo from Boulder, and KGNU has always been in my life as long as I've been in reception. But I just have to tell you how important it's become to me, like, more and more every day. I'll start here. I woke up this morning. I didn't know what I was doing, aiming for, going. I had no plan. I turned KGNU on, and right away, I feel like I'm being led into, you know, my favorite show, which is The Blues Tonight. And I've always been an inactive participant. I liked the music in the background, but somehow I found out that singing, keeping rhythm, whistling, sort of like expands on all that for me. And now I'm an active part of the music, and it's so energizing. I feel like I could live on air. I could go on for a whole long time longer, but to point this out very succinctly, it's like you're a friend there all the time. Every person who's on behind the microphone, I feel, is part of my world community, and you just bring so much love and awareness to our community, and I hope way beyond it. And all I can say is I love you beyond words.
Well, hello, y'all. This is Kelvin McCabe, man. And this is the good, bad, and ugly guy. Yes, it is. I figured I'd make a comment. I know y'all jamming with some blues and some R&B and everything right now. Unfortunately, don't have access to get it on air right now. But I look forward to when I'm able to, when I'll be able to. The music is journey. Very good. But bad, well, there's a lot of things that are bad right now. There's a lot of things that are going bad. Well, I know that this administration wants to blame Putin for the higher prices in gas, but this is a farce. First of all, Mr. Biden got rid of the Keystone pipeline from Alaska. First thing, one of the first things he vetoed, if I recall, one of the top five, within the top five things that he vetoed was that. And one other thing, this global warming stuff, well, we need to be responsible with our gas and everything else. But to get rid of the baby with the, you know, get rid of the baby in the bathwater, that's what we're doing with getting rid of oil and gas and coal. And like I said before, I'm going to go ahead and go. And thank you very much for allowing me to make my comments. And I hope you still love me.
Hi, this is Mark, a longtime Denver listener. I was pretty excited when I first heard the announcements of the listener survey. and I just took it. It took me more, I think, than 20 minutes, but I would encourage other listeners to take the opportunity and offer their input. I think it's something that the station probably could have done a long time ago, and I think it's great that they're doing it now. But I also have to express serious disappointment in that I don't think it was well designed if you're really trying to solicit input from listeners on how the station could improve. It offered mostly numeric ratings of existing offerings, and it didn't seem like there were nearly as many opportunities to offer sort of constructive, critical feedback. The survey just didn't seem all that open or receptive in how it was designed. It basically said, you know, do you like what we're offering, and isn't this a station that offers that? So, therefore, you must be in love with KGNU, and most of us who do listen regularly actually do find some value, but that doesn't mean it's hitting every opportunity or reaching its full potential. So, again, I would invite everybody to give it a try, because any opportunity to provide feedback is great, but I just think it could be done much better, so I hope you try that again another time.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.